And thank you to the organisers for the opportunity to talk in this session, and also for Alison. That's a great introduction to my talk. So thank you very much for in essence showing how diverse HIV is and the complexity of HIV. And this complexity and diversity is really an impediment to vaccine design. And the figure on the left-hand side of this slide is really showing you the global diversity that you see of HIV when you compare it to another pathogen, which is also highly variable, and for which we, although we do have a vaccine, it's not always effective, and also it needs to be renewed every 12 months or so. And so in this particular image, you can see that the diversity of HIV as it radiates from a central point is a representation of how diverse the virus is, and underneath that you have an equivalent protein on the outer surface of the virus for flu. And clearly you can see that diversity of flu is much less than what you see for HIV. And so our group and many others have been really interested in what drives this diversity of HIV. And to a certain extent, what we know is what is driving it is selection pressure, not of drugs, but of the host's immune response. And so we like to think of it, the host immune response in itself, as an analogy, if you like to think of it, as an immune drug. And this immune drug can exert a selective pressure on the virus, and this can actually shape some of the diversity that we see. So which part of the immune system am I talking about? And I'm actually going to focus on just one aspect of the immune system. But this is a slide that shows you sort of a basic overview of what happens or your immunological response to a pathogen. And so on the left-hand side, you have, in essence, the sort of frontline defence, fairly quick. A lot of this is mucosally related, innate immunity that doesn't tend to have a memory. So basically, if you get infected again by the same virus or pathogen, there's no memory of that previous exposure. And so your reaction is, in essence, relatively similar the second time round. But on the right-hand side is the adaptive immune system, in which you do have memory, and also the way in which the cells and the molecules in this aspect, in this part of the immune system, sees the virus is also quite different. Some of you will be quite familiar with the formation of antibodies to a particular pathogen, and that's really driven by the B cells or the B lymphocytes. But the one that I'm really going to talk and focus on today is the immune system as characterised by the T cells. And these T cells see pathogens in quite a different way. So they see it only when it's presented by the host itself, particularly for infected cells. So if to just focus mainly on these T lymphocytes, on the left-hand side is showing you a bit more detail exactly how the virus is seen by T cells. And so what you can see is on the bottom of that left-hand side, you see the a CD4 T cell, which is infected by HIV. And then there's a certain amount of gymnastics that happens within the actual infected T cell that basically processes or chops up the virus into small pieces. And those small pieces are put onto the surface of that cell to basically tell your immune system, I'm infected, what are you going to do about it? And in essence, what the T cell does, which is up the top, the CD8 T cell, it can recognise that complex, which is basically a complex of your host molecule, which acts like a beacon, which we term the human leukocyte antigen. And then you can see the little green bit, which is only a small part of the virus. So it's not the whole virus that's presented, but typically around about 9 to 10 amino acids in this part. And the red part is really showing you the receptor on the T cell that can recognise that complex. And when it does that, it can actually kill the cell. So it's a very effective mechanism. If you have a cell that's infected by a virus, one of the best things to do is to actually get rid of it. And so these CD8 T cells are very effective at actually killing infected cells. So what's important to also remember is that we are very diverse in the blue molecule, which is the human leukocyte antigen, that presents the parts of the virus. So that many people in this room don't have a blue version. Many of you would have a green, a red, a yellow version, etc. And depending on the type that you have, you present a different part of the virus. And so I like to think of it as a little bit like a hot dog and a sausage. So the hot dog is the HLA molecule, and the part of the virus which is presented is actually the sausage in the middle. And we all, of course, can have quite different size buns, etc., and the sausage can be quite different. So think about it like that. So that's sort of immunology 101. So this is the viral peptide in the middle. And what's really important is that HIV is incredibly diverse because it has a high mutation rate and replication rate. So it changes very rapidly. And it's a little bit like going to the casino and doing sort of the one-armed bandit, and you sort of pull the slot thing and it goes, and it makes a mutation. And just by chance, it might hit on a mutation that actually occurs within this actual part, which is presented by this molecule. And by doing so, it can actually escape the way in which the virus is presented to the T cell. And so we call this adaptation, or viral adaptation, or escape, immune escape. And the, and basically, the effect that that has, those mutations, so for example, the blue is indicating the viral peptide, and in yellow are the mutations that may arise. And what happens when those mutations arise is that that presentation on the left-hand side can no longer occur. And that's a really effective mechanism that HIV can use to evade our immune system. And so these mutations are actually specific. So how important are these mutations or adaptations to our to outcome in the context of HIV infection? So we can look at the sort of history of the natural history of HIV infection by looking at viral load, where you get the peak in acute infection and then a drop-off and then an increase again later in the stage as you get to the later stages of outcome. But superimposed on that, we have in green the actual T cell response against the virus. And what we and what has actually been known is that the accumulation of adaptation in the virus over time is associated with poor outcome. So these specific changes are actually bad for you. And studies have shown, for example, that if you look at elite controllers, people who do well with HIV, well, not well, but at least don't do as badly as other people, they tend to control the virus a little bit better, they actually have less adaptation, that is, the virus is less adapted to them than those who typically don't do so well. And on the left, on the y-axis, is the amount of adaptation. So basically, the higher you up on that y-axis, the more the virus is adapted to your immune system. So you can see there on the left, you have elite controllers, those who do better, they have lower levels on average than those who typically progress. So we know that accumulation of adaptation is really important, but we also know that what comes into you is also very important. If the virus that comes into you from the initial transmission is highly adapted to your immune system, then you might expect that you don't do so well, because your virus, to some extent, is already adapted to your immune system, the way you're actually going to fight it. And so there's some very nice data out there that shows that when you look at what the recipient has received from the donor, and then you look at viral load, so on the left-hand axis, on the y-axis, is the viral load of the recipient, and on the x-axis is the amount of adaptation. So the further to the right, the more adapted that virus is to immune system. And so you can see the correlation, a nice correlation between viral load. The higher the viral load, the higher the viral load. So you tend to do worse as your, you know, what you receive is more adapted to your immune system. And that sort of makes sense because it's going to influence the HIV life cycle. So it's going to have an impact on outcome. So we've been really interested in the dynamics of these adaptations, what happens to them once they come into you, do they revert back to the wild type when you remove the pressure, etc. And all of that is important in the context of informing vaccine design. So as I mentioned at the beginning, I like to think of it as an immune drug. So if you think of it as an analogy here of these immune responses as an anti-HIV drug and the adaptations that occur in the virus as a drug-resistant mutation, then in a way, it's a very similar analogy. Unfortunately, the colours don't work so well on the left-hand side, but imagine here we have your anti-immune HIV drugs. This is your immune response. It's acting as a drug. And what you have are, within a person, there's a quasi-species, it's sort of a swarm population. It's not a single strain. It's typically very closely related strains together, and it sort of is a population of viruses on the left-hand side, represented by the different colours. And I've boxed in the one that hopefully you can see, the blue versus the orangey-red. You may not see it as well, but anyway, then you have a yellow. And on here, you can see that if you give this drug, and imagine that's your immune system, you've got the yellow and the orange, which doesn't do so well. So basically, it's very effective against those ones. But the purple ones, actually, there's a mutation that means that given this immune response, you cannot see the virus. In a way, it becomes invisible. So it's a little bit like a drug-resistant mutation. So what might you expect to occur in those scenarios? Well, what should occur, you would think, is that there's an advantage to this type of virus in that individual, so it's going to probably become the dominant strain in that individual. And in fact, the colouring, hopefully you saw the shift from the two colours. Let's see if you can see it again in slow motion, maybe not. Anyway, so the blue, you can see, is now becoming the dominant strain. And so we're very interested in how that occurs and how long it takes, for example, to become the dominant strain, etc. And also, when you remove the drug, so if you remove the immune pressure, does that revert back to the wild type or the consensus that you might think? Just like you might expect with an anti-HIV drug, where there may be a fitness cost to those particular mutations. So we've been utilising next-generation sequencing technologies to enable us to understand these dynamics. And so this is a Sanger-based sequencing type that many of you may be familiar with, where you look at the actual ACTG combination. And in essence, if you were to look at the individual on the left-hand side, what you would identify is the major strain, which would be basically that orangey-red type strain. And you probably wouldn't be able to identify the purple or the yellowy-green. So we converted to next-generation sequencing, and what this does basically is it allows you, in very high sensitivity or resolution, to identify the majority of those species that are circulating in an individual at a very high level. So you can look at species that are circulating at in a person at less than 1%, for example. And so you're actually able to identify the purple and the green, etc., as well as the main dominant one at this point, which is a reddish-type virus. And that's very important if you want to understand the dynamics of these types of changes in an individual over time or when you consider specific transmissions. So we, in trying to understand what happens to these adaptations, do they revert back when you remove the pressure, etc., because it's important to understand that if they don't revert, it means that they're going to be accumulating in the population over time. And that, and Alison very nicely referred to that, is the potential for the virus that's circulating in the population to become more adapted to the hosts at a population level. And so in order to do that, we examine mother-child transmission pairs. And so the mother there is has a blue and a purple. That's her immune, so that's her immune drugs, if you like to think of it. And the child, of course, has inherited the purple one from the mother and the green one from the father. And what we expect to occur is that, you know, the virus has been circulating in the mother, so it's likely to have adaptations that are relevant for the purple and the blue. When she has transmitted the virus to the child, then what you would expect that the child, in a way, has two scenarios. One in which those adaptations are now under the same pressure, the purple drug, or, and alternatively, under the green one as well. So you have, so the, for example, the blue adaptations that are occurring in the mother, when they go into the child, they should no longer be under immune pressure. So it's almost like taking the drug away. So what we actually show with this particular set of 26 mother-child pairs from Haiti, clade B type, is we look first to make sure to confirm the mother-child transmission. And this tree, in essence, basically shows that the mother and the child form very tight clusters, which indicates a relatively recent transmission. And then what we also showed is that when you look at the diversity in the mother and you look at it in the child, what you find is that there is a reduction in the diversity in the child, which suggests that there's a bottleneck, basically, of all of the swarm in the mother. What you actually just transmitted is probably a much smaller component or a subtype, a group, of the one that's originally in the mother. And then, so then what we wanted to look at is basically what is the what happens when you put it under different selective environments. So basically what happens when you look at the adaptations relative to the purple, and then what about those adaptations relative to the blue. So they're going to be in different selective places. So basically, I'm imagining drug, you continue with the same drug or you take the drug away. So this is a slide which is basically showing all of these adaptations, or imagine that these are drug-resistant mutations, and we're looking at the amount that it occurs in the mother, and then how frequent are these when you look at the child. So on the bottom, you see the frequency of these adaptations in the mother. On the y-axis is the frequency in the child. So if you just focus on the top right-hand corner, this means these are these adaptations or immune escape mutations that are present at basically 90 to 100% in the mother. And then when you look at the child, you actually find the same mutations are occurring also at about 90 to 100%. On the bottom right-hand corner, these are mutations that occur in the mother at 90 to 100%, but have completely, almost completely reverted in the child. So they've gone down to basically zero, or you don't see that mutation in the child. So in summary, what we show in this context is that there's a lot of maintenance, that is, of these adaptations from the mother to the child, particularly when they share the same immune pressure. That's sort of what you would have expected. We also see more of this reversion, the bottom right-hand corner, when you take the drug away. Or basically, the child no longer has that immune pressure on the virus, and the virus is reverting back to a form that's non-adapted and potentially more fit for that particular virus. And then we, of course, also see a lot of new adaptations in the child that relate back to the father's HLA type that the child has inherited. But the interesting thing that I'll show, this is my last results slide, is that this is really what was of main interest for us, is that when you look at those adaptations that are relevant for the blue type for the mother's immune system, you can see that's not inherited by the child. So what does that mean? It means when we look at the adaptations in the mother versus the child, we find that only about 14% of those changes revert. We would have expected a lot more to revert. And in fact, what we find is that most of them are maintained, even though the child no longer exerts pressure on that part of the virus. So if we think about, and it's my last slide in summary, what are the implications of this? Well, it's been suggested that when you have a virus that infects an individual, and if you have, for example, your immune system is designated by blue, and you target a particular part of the virus, you have a mutation that arises because it's under pressure, that mutation exerts or has a selective advantage for that virus. When that virus is then transmitted to someone else who has the same type as you, immune system as you, has a blue as well, that mutation is going to remain or is going to be propagated. But if you then transmit that to someone who has a green immune system, the expectation is, in fact, that should revert, just like a drug. If you take the drug away, you might expect that the drug-resistant mutation converts back to a wild type. But in fact, what we're finding, and this is not the only study that we've shown, it was shown also with acute infection, is that rather than reverting, these adaptations are actually remaining in the population. So the implication of that is that the circulating virus is becoming more adapted to the host population. And this was actually shown in South Africa in another study by Philip Goulder's group, in which they looked on the lighter blue side, the level of adaptation for those who don't have the relevant immune drug, you can see is lower in general if you follow the bars, and then between 2012 and 2013, there's an increase of those mutations within the circulating populations. And that's important in the context of vaccine design, is that the circulating population potentially is becoming more adapted to the host population. So a lot of this work is by the group at Murdoch, at UWA, and also Vanderbilt. And Jennifer Corrente, I can't point her out, but I'll point her out here. It's Jennifer and Eric, and they're presenting in the next session. So thank you very much.